Well, for those of you who were expecting Barney to teach, sorry to disappoint you. It's me, which means that some of you may exit, enjoy the rest of your day. But I'm going to give you that opportunity to do that anyway, because for those of you who heard Ron, proof that great minds think alike, I also was going to cover Appendices 164. So for those of you who fully understood and get it, you can add an extra hour of fun with family and exit now if you like. Unless, of course, Barney wants to jump in and do something else. But for those of you who, like me, are a little slow to understand sometimes and have to read this these six times and go through it verse by verse, then stick with me. And I'm going to actually look at some of the Greek words used for thieves, robbers, and malefactors, so it's a little bit different. Maybe a little more clarity, if you will, at least wise it was for me and having gone through this. So again, if you feel that this is redundant, then you will not offend me by saying farewell and happy Resurrection Day to you. If you are going to stick with me, couple of you say yes, so I know that you're hearing me and, in fact, want to hear more. And if not, ask maybe Chip to send this out, study out to everybody so you have a copy of it. Happy to provide that for you. As I said, just a little bit of clarity in looking at some of the words used for thieves, robbers, and malefactors and why that's a difference, why that has an impact on what you're actually reading. And I think the important thing is that as we look at this, some people will say the discrepancies we see are because there's four different writers. And because there's four different writers, we have four different scenarios, but that it really is clear there were only three people that were crucified that day. And we're making a big deal out of nothing. But let me read something to you. And when writing things and when reviewing things, sometimes there is a different perspective. I don't know that Chip needs to post this portion, but perspective is everything. There were three reporters that were sent to cover a fire burning in a large warehouse, an office building downtown. Each arrived at a different route and took up a position behind the fire line on three different sides of the building. One saw smoke and fire billowing from windows out front. Two people called out from the window screaming for help. The firemen rescued both. The second was in the back. His story said that 12 people were rescued out the back door. The third said it was not known if any was in the building because no one came to the side door of the building he was on. So which was right? Which is accurate? And so what they are saying here is that there's three perspectives. Each is true, but in fact, each is not the whole truth. And when you go to a trial, when you are asked to be a witness, they ask you, are you willing to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And each of these individuals would say that they told the truth and nothing but the truth, but they could not accurately say that it was the whole truth because they didn't cover all three sides of the building. So let's cover all three sides here, and let's really see what, in fact, this Appendices 164 is talking about. So let's turn to Matthew 27:37, and Let me read it to you. Matthew 27:37. And they set up over his head his accusation written, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Then there were two thieves crucified with him, one on the right hand, the other on the left. Okay, so as Ronnie explained, the Lord's in the middle, and he's got two thieves that are crucified, one on the right and one on the left. And they that passed reviled him, wagging his hands, saying, thou that destroys the temple and builds it in 3 days, save yourself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priests mocking him with the scribes and the elders said, he saved others, himself he cannot save. And if he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross and we'll believe him. Can you just hear the sarcasm in that? Talk about mocking. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. So, there were two crucified with him. Are we sure of that? Are we sure that this is the full perspective? So, if we go to Matthew 27:44, it says, the thieves which were crucified with him cast the same in his teeth. Okay? So he's talking about the fact that they were reviling him as well. So the idea of casting or mocking, if you will, the same in his teeth, in his face, right? So they were in his face. All right? So the word here for thieves is the word lestes or lestes. It means to plunder, a brigand, a robber, a thief. So both of the thieves reviled him, okay? So if both thieves reviled him, then that would say, okay, one on each side of him. So go to Mark 15:22, and I'm going to read through 32. And they bring him unto the place of Golgotha, which is being interpreted the place of the skull. And they gave him to drink wine mingled with myrrh, but he received it not. Now, interesting, that's the case, because later on it's going to say that he did. And he received it not. And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them what every man should take. And it was the third hour, and they crucified him. And the subscription of his accusation was written over the King of the Jews. And with him they crucified two thieves, the one on his right hand, the other on his left. And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, and he was numbered with the transgressors. And they that passed by railed on him, wagging their heads and saying, ah, thou that destroys the temple and builds it in 3 days, save thyself and come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priests, mocking, said among themselves with the scribes, he saved others, himself he cannot save. Let the Christ, King of Israel, come now from the cross, that we may see and believe. And they crucified, and they that were crucified with him reviled him. All right, so both of those that were crucified with him reviled him, being the two thieves above that we just read. So let's skip over to John, chapter 10, verse 18. Then said Jesus unto them again, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. It's 10:8, not 10:18. I apologize. 10:8. Then said Jesus unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers. All right, we have two different words here now. One is the word thieves. The other is the word robbers. So if thieves and robbers are the same, why are they two different Greek words and obviously translated two different English words? It goes on to say, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, any man enter, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not but to steal, to kill, and to destroy. That is why there's two Greek words here, okay? Because the word thief here is the Greek word kleptis, alright, as opposed to the word that we saw earlier, which was less, alright, which is similar core to that word. It is where we get the word kleptomaniac, okay, klepto. The word robber here, however, is the same word we saw earlier, which is leptis, which means to plunder, a robber, or thief, okay? So one is also someone that not only steals, but they kill and destroy. So a much more serious person, okay? So why do you use these two different words? John 18:30, and they answered and said to him, if he were not a malefactor. Now these are the scribes, Pharisees, and the Sadducees, etc., the Herodians, that got Herod to condemn Christ, give them Barabbas, and crucify Christ. So he says, why are you giving him to me? And they said, they answered and said unto him, if he were not a malefactor, we would not have delivered him up unto thee. Then said Pilate unto them, take him and judge him. I'm sorry, I said Herod, I meant Pilate. Take ye him and judge him according to your law. The Jews therefore said unto him, it is not lawful for us to put any man to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying what death he should die. Now, the Greek word for malefactor is the word kekaposis. It means a bad doer, a criminal, an evil doer, translated malefactor. Now, they could not come up with a actual accusation that he stole something, that he killed someone. Therefore, he did not deserve death. All they could say is, yeah, he's a bad person. You got to get rid of him. Which is why Pilate then offered him someone else who actually deserved death, because Barabbas was in fact a murderer. Let's go to Luke 23:32-43. And there were also two malefactors led with him to be put to death. Now, Ron read this earlier, and the point is, earlier we heard that there was two crucified with him, two thieves. But here, there were malefactors led with him. In verse 33 of Luke 23 says, and when they were come to the place which is called Calvary, there they crucified him and the malefactors, one on the right hand, the other on the left. Now, we've got thieves on the right and the left, and now we've got malefactors on the right and left. But they crucified the malefactors with him at the same time, which means that there was a thief on the left, then a malefactor, then Christ, then a malefactor, and then a thief. And Ron read that. Ron covered that. But you need to picture this to understand why it's important that there's different words here describing different people. Otherwise, you just think that they're all the same. They're just criminals, right? And so there's two. So they crucified him and the malefactors, one on the right hand, the other on the left. And then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they parted his raiment and cast lots, and the people stood beholding. And the rulers also with him derided him, saying, he saved others, let him save himself, if he be the Christ, the chosen of God. And the soldiers also mocked him, coming to him and offering him vinegar, and saying, if thou be the King of Jews, save thyself. And a subscription also was written over him in the letters of the Greek and Latin and the Hebrew. All right, so there's three different versions of this title that was put over. It's not a title, it's an accusation. The accusation we read earlier is, this is Jesus, King of the Jews. This now says, this is the King of the Jews. And one of the malefactors, which were hanged, railed on him. Only one. Earlier we heard there were two. There were two thieves. The two thieves, in fact, did throw it back in his face and mock him. So one of the malefactors, which were hanged, railed on him, saying, if thou be Christ, save thyself and us. But the other, answering, rebuked him. In other words, rebuked the other malefactor, saying, dost thou now fear God, seeing thou art in the same condemnation? In other words, that, look, you're being condemned, and you're calling the kettle black. And we indeed justly should be crucified. For we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man hath done nothing amiss. And he said unto Jesus, Lord, remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom. And Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, today shalt thou be with me in paradise. Okay? Now this would be a totally different study, but you should take a look at this phrase, today thou shalt be with me in paradise. Because this should actually say, and Jesus said unto him today, verily I say unto you, thou shalt be with me in paradise. So in other words, the phraseology that's used here isn't the appropriate words. He was saying, look, I'm telling you right now, you will be with me in paradise. Not today, okay, because we know that there was only one that has been resurrected, only one that has ascended into heaven. Whole different study. Okay, so the verse here for malefactor is another Greek word, kakagoras, and it means a wrongdoer, a criminal, an evildoer, a malefactor. Okay, so not just a bad person, as we saw earlier. But an evildoer. So why does John use a different word for malefactor? Let's take a look at John 19:16. Then delivered he him therefore unto them to be crucified, and they took Jesus and led him away, and he bearing his cross went forth into a place called the place of a skull, which is called in the Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him and two other with him on either side, and Jesus in the midst. If you've ever been to Israel, the reason this is called the place of the skull is not because there's skulls all around, but the facade of the side of the hill actually looks like a skull with two big eyeballs and the fake leaf. So it's very graphic to stand there and be in awe of this. Because we know where Calvary is. We know that Christ was crucified at the top of this hill because of the description of the landscape. And starting in 19, John 19:19, and Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. Okay, different title here, a different rendering of it anyway. This title then read many of the Jews. For the place where Jesus was crucified was nigh to the city, and it was written in Hebrew, in Greek, and in Latin. Then said the chief priests of the Jews to Pilate, write not the King of the Jews, but that he said, I am the King of the Jews. Pilate answered and says, what I have written, I have written. Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Jesus, took his garments and made four parts, to every soldier a part and also his coat. Now the coat was without seam, woven from the top throughout. They said therefore among themselves, let us not rend it, but cast lots for it, whose it shall be, that the scripture might be fulfilled, which saith, they parted my garment, my raiment, among them, and for my vesture they did cast lots. These things therefore the soldiers did. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Cleophas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple standing by whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, woman, behold thy son. Then saith he to the disciple, behold thy mother. And from that hour, that disciple took her unto his own home. After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, saith, I thirst. Now there was a set of vessel full of vinegar, and they filled a sponge with vinegar and put it upon hyssop and put it to his mouth. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, he said, it is finished. And he bowed his head and gave up the ghost. Remember before that he refused. So on more than one occasion, they offered this to him. And the second time he actually took it. Now, sometimes, it's said that vinegar was, mixed with, other things, which was kind of a painkiller. I believe that's why he did not take it initially, because he knew he needed to suffer for the world. Verse 31, the Jews therefore, because it was the preparation, that the body should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath day. For that Sabbath day was a high day, besought Pilate that their legs might be broken and that they might be taken away. Now, why did they break the legs? They break the legs because now there's nothing to support them. They can't push up without excruciatingly more pain. And therefore, with their arms above their head, which it was, it's much harder to breathe because you eliminate the capacity of your lungs by pressing your hands together over your head. If your arms are out, it's easier, which is why they called it a cross. But the reality is, there's no evidence that a cross was in fact what they were hung on. And that's another story. So in came the soldiers, and they break the legs of the first. The first what? The first person on one side of Christ, okay? They break the legs of the first and of the other which was crucified with him. So they broke one and then broke another. But when they came to Jesus and saw that he was dead already, they break not his legs. So, as Ron pointed out, they didn't pass him by. They went from the malefactor to the thief breaking both their legs. When they get to Christ, he's dead, so they didn't break his legs. But one of the soldiers with a spear pierced his side, and forthwith came blood and water. And he that saw it bear record, and his record is true, and he knows that he saith true, that he might believe. For these things were done, and the scripture should be fulfilled, a bone of him shall not be broken. And again, another scripture saith, they shall look on him whom they pierced. So why would they skip the Lord and then come back? Makes no sense. But instead, they broke the legs of two, came to Christ, pierced him, then went on to the others. If nothing else, the Romans were very meticulous, a lot of order, very organized. They're not going to skip somebody and come back. They're going to take care of everybody in order. So, does it really matter that there were five crucified that day? And after hearing and reading this twice, does it change anything? Do you see that there were more than two that were hung with Christ on the cross, if that's what it was? It just reminds us that we've got to read this word carefully. And as Ron's already pointed out, we've got to rightly divide. You've got to read to discover what's similar and what is different, and then ask why. That's why after reading this appendices, I had to read it about six times over the last 10 years to really understand it, to see what point was he really making, other than the fact that there's a picture someplace of an actual five cross setting where the middle cross is the tallest of the five. And why a cross, not sure. But what would happen if we don't look at the context and understand the Greek and the Hebrew language that the Bible was written, and actually the Aramaic as well? You could believe tradition, but that was what the Lord warned about, because the Pharisees created traditions based on translations that were convenient and profitable for themselves. So how many more traditions do you believe are that are not truth? For instance, was it in fact a cross? Or, given the Greek words that were used, could it have been a tree? Because it's translated that in another place, that he that they hung on a tree. And in another place, it's translated stake. So, here's my challenge. You have to look at it. You're going to have to read it. You're going to have to search it out. You're going to have to look at the Greek and the Hebrew to make sure that what you believe to be true is not tradition, but in fact, fact. It's not just a perspective of some other individual that has read this and said, oh, well, this is the way it must be, when in reality they have not seen the whole truth because they haven't looked at the Greek and the Hebrew and the Aramaic to fully understand it. We have great study tools available to us. Use them. So hopefully that brought a little more clarity into your mind. I think Ron did a great job on the subject that he discussed. He did a great job of presenting this a piece as well. And Chip, if it's possible, if you could send out the study that you to post. Really appreciate you, Chip. I found out late that Tony wasn't going to be available. You were having computer trouble. You were frantically trying to get online and log in. So I really appreciate your effort, Chip, and we continually pray for you and the testimony that you have and the life that you lead. You're a great witness to us. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. Oh, okay, you're going to ask Tony to send out the list. That would be great. So everybody, thank you. Happy Resurrection Day. Enjoy your family. Stay safe. Stay healthy. And we're praying for each of you. May God bless each of you this day.